The following is a breakout session from the 2014 Acts 29 conference in Dallas. Given the interactive nature of breakouts and Q&A, there may be extended periods of silence.
Well, good to see everybody again. I just want to say thank you for being here. 15 months ago, we started thinking about what could we do organizationally that would be most helpful in helping churches plant churches. And so along with the board, we kind of developed this idea of really focusing on church health. I think this is actually going to be our core business moving forward, focusing on helping develop systems for healthy churches and then helping churches figure out what it looks like to develop systems for healthy leaders. And so how do you develop those systems for churches and leaders, and how do you maintain those systems for churches and leaders? So to see you here, I'm very encouraged by that, and I hope that our time here will be helpful. I want to do just a couple of things, but first a little bit about our story as a church. Again, my friend, what was your name again? Sam? Scott? No, Steve. Yeah, Steve Woods and Donna Ray, who are part of our church. Steve's training to be one of our elders, and they are friends. I'm very thankful for them. We planted our church in 1989. I haven't been there that long. I'm not that old. I've been there for 10 years, and when I came to the church 10 years ago, we're a replant, so when I got there 10 years ago, Steve and Donna Ray had moved away for a while. They're in Virginia, and what we had was a church of about 30 people, and everybody there was kind of bruised and broken from how the relationship with the founding pastor and the elders had dissolved. So here I come in wearing my big white hat at 28 years old, thinking the world was obviously ready to hear me preach. And so I didn't come with the heart of a pastor because I didn't know how to do that. So I have professionally understood how to lead with my head and my hands. Maybe at the ripe old age of 39, I'm beginning to learn how to lead from my heart, which is a very scary thing for me to even say out loud. Like, I just got really nervous in the sweats and all that kind of stuff. But maybe I'm learning. But 10 years, I think, of struggling and straining about being able to actually be part of a church I wanted to be part of. Where we're actually doing this in relationships where we're pressing for friendship and not just basically using one another to get what we want spiritually or for my own kingdom-building purposes, right? So here's some things that I'd like to do here for a couple of minutes. One is I want to talk about some things that we're learning organizationally within Acts 29 that may help you. And then I want to point you to a couple of resources that you can pick up on already. If you're in Acts 29, these are the resources we gave you in Miami this year on growing godly elders. So I want to walk through a few of those. One of the most helpful things that we've talked about over the last year internally is the fact that when you talk about growing godly elders, even in a group of 200 to 400 people, you're not talking about, everybody in this room is not in the same place developmentally. So we think churches find themselves in at least one of three different levels of development. So some of you are brand new churches. Some of you have been able to splash pretty big. You just jumped right off the high dive and the cannonball was big, and all of a sudden here you are months in, maybe that first year and a half, and you're at 200 to 400 people. But you're still a new church as it relates to your systems and structures. You're enjoying the wind is at your back, and you just basically keep showing up and people keep showing up. But you're still very new. Nothing has really formulated. You're just trying to not get in the way. So new churches, developing churches, this is when you're beginning to figure out who you are, beginning to think through what it looks like for us to put this and that together to create a system and a structure for the way that we're going to grow elders. And then we talk about established churches. That means that you have come to a place of organizational maturity where not only are you continuing to grow and develop people, but you're actually beginning to codify and put some things in place. So some of you are here, your churches are 200 to 400 in size, and you're pretty well settled. And so there are going to be some things here that you're wrestling with. What I find at 200 to 400 for established churches is you're thinking through planting, how do we replicate this? And you're also thinking through, how do we not lose our edge? How do we not basically become complacent and allow the processes that we've put in place, the systems we put in place, to suck the life out of our organization? So that's the first thing that I would just encourage you to do, is figure out who you are and where you are developmentally, just in terms of an organizational life cycle. And that may help you to kind of land where you need to be as we talk about what it looks like to grow godly elders. A couple of things that I would just say related to what Steve has said earlier, the transition, is that in that transition, what I find that we've had to wrestle with is that we've actually had to begin putting some things down on paper. We have had to actually go from just being really intuitive and going, I think that's a really great guy, to begin developing some things that I think are critical for us to make sure that we're going to do right by the men that are coming through our process, through a pretty deep leadership development pipeline that I know y'all are going to be talking about later. So that leadership development pipeline putting us in a position where we now have some men that we feel like God's calling us to basically check, be with, grow with, see if they're going to be elders. And so trying to create some things around that to where it's not just, I like him, but we're actually at a place now where we want to be able to do a good job of assessing and testing and things like that. So here's what I want to do. I want to let you know the resources that are available to you from Acts 29 that we've developed to help churches grow godly elders. So I just want to run through a list of these, and we'll take some questions about growing godly elders, anything that you may be wrestling with in your church as it relates to this topic, where you're at with 200 to 400 people. So I've got 8 things, okay? So here's the first one. One is that you should probably think longer about your development process than you already are. That's both in hiring staff and I think in terms of training, ordaining, and installing elders. So I think it's a pretty sound management practice that you should basically take what you think is the right amount of time and think longer. Because you want to make sure you do a good job on the front end so that you don't have to spend a lot of time on the back end when the wheels come off. So I can give you an example of a guy that came into our church, very entrepreneurial mindset, respected the guy a lot, appreciated him, watched him really get involved in our church very quickly, do a lot of really great things with us. And then as we started to get into the elder process, we saw later in the game, towards the end of him being in that elder process, after 3 or 4 years, that we weren't on the same page. Not only was he not Presbyterian, which is kind of a problem, but we also found that philosophically there were some distinctions that if they kept going, we're going to create this. And so I'm thankful that we didn't take those first year and just go, this guy's fantastic, and just run him through a very quick process to get him in there. So I think in terms of thinking longer than you might be thinking now about your elder process, I know you want elders, you want to get the guys there. My hope is that we'll slow down enough to have more long-term effectiveness. So that's the first one, think longer about your development process. Secondly would be to install tripwires early. You want to very quickly ask some very detailed questions of this man and his family, about his finances, about things like basic theology. So for us, again, as a Presbyterian church, we'd want to ask about baptism. We don't require people to believe in the idea of covenant baptism as covenant members of our church, but we do, with elders, believe that. And so pretty quickly, we want to go, hey, so where are you with this? And just create some tripwires to where maybe we need to steer the conversation away and not go 8-9 months into this and then find out, hey, you know what? This guy's marriage is about to fall apart, or he's totally upside down in credit card debt. So we want to put some of those things early. Third is this, trust objective measurements. Again, this gets away from just being intuitive, but find the things that you value, whether it's in terms of personality or giftedness and skill, and test towards that. So personality assessments can be your friend. Don't do all of them. Don't send somebody through Myers-Briggs and DISC and StrengthsFinders and Right Path. Just find one or two that maybe complement each other and then just utilize those. So I love those things. I'm an INTJ. My Myers-Briggs personality means I'm a mad scientist. So I'm always trying to create stuff. So I could basically create this unbelievably elaborate labyrinth of things for people to go through. So we would know them very well and they would know themselves very well. What I'm hoping is that we'll just grab a couple of those and keep doing those things. So we have some that are very, very helpful. One that you may not know of called the Synergist Quiz by a friend of mine named Les McEwen. Les, as far as I know, is not a follower of Jesus. He's an Irishman, but he's been immensely helpful to me personally and to our church organizationally. So you can go to the synergistquiz.com. Maybe the is not in there, just synergistquiz.com. And what it does is it helps evaluate your natural wiring related to, are you a visionary leader, meaning you're always big dreams, that kind of role, we get that, entrepreneurial. Are you an operator, meaning you don't care about the big picture, you just are basically like, hey, so what's next? And you just want to do that. And then you have processors, who are the people that work underground trying to take all the activity you're doing and put it together into something that actually can flow. And then you have synergists, which are people that really know, are pretty well-rounded in knowing, okay, we need to be visionary here, we need to be processing here, we need to be operating there. So that may be one that you're not really aware of. So that's a great one. So I would say find some of those things that you can trust, and you just go, for us, we're going to rely on that. Not in place of the Holy Spirit, but coming along with the Holy Spirit so that we might get an objective picture of who these men and women are that we're running in the church with. And then in terms of our elders, we use these as well. So we have about three of them that we use. The fourth, and some of these are going to be very obvious. I just want to make sure we don't assume and miss the obvious. Fourth is you want to train theologically, philosophically, and methodologically. So know what you want to train to theologically. Know what you want to train to philosophically. So this may be where you're new or developing church and you don't even know yet. So can you articulate your philosophy of ministry in such a way that you've codified it and can reproduce it and train to it? Because what I find is that it's not the theology that's going to throw you off as much as it's probably going to be your philosophy of ministry. So I can be in a room with a lot of PCA churches, but even in our city where we have four PCA churches, our philosophies of ministry are distinct enough that there are places in which an elder at this church wouldn't be an effective elder in my church, and an effective elder in my church wouldn't be an effective elder over at this other church because of philosophy of ministry that's going to flow out in your methodology. So train to those things, and I would encourage you to train to those things in cohorts. Do that together. Utilize that as part of your leadership pipeline, so that you're not just starting to talk about a philosophy of ministry with somebody who's in your elder training program for that year to year and a half. Start that earlier. Find ways that you're being able to drip that into the life of people when they're maybe really early on. So for us in a university context, I want our university students to begin at least understanding some of the basic premises of our philosophy of ministry. And we want to train to that. So we don't want to assume it. So we want to help them walk through that, and we want to help them walk through that together. Number five is include more than just elders in your assessment. So when you're assessing an elder, this is where you may want to include deacons. This is where you may want to include other people who have a good read on people. You have some people in your church that are going to be really good just intuitively at being able to go, I don't know what it is, I just know that ain't right. You want them in the room so you can follow up on that. So people who have just that kind of weird sixth sense about people, you want them involved in assessment. So don't limit yourself to just elders. Because again, it's kind of like marriage. The longer you're married, you share the same blind spots. The same thing with your elder teams. You should begin to share the same blind spots. And so if you're bringing in deacons or people who aren't even officers in your church, and you're allowing them to be able to see from a slightly different perspective, I think that'll help you get a healthy assessment. Number six, monitor the health of your team at least annually. This is something that, so our church is right here with you, right? So we're 200 to 400, so I'm not as much going, hey, this is what we've done, we were super successful. These are some things we're growing in that as we've developed these resources internally within Acts 29, I'm like, ooh, that's really good. And this is one of them. Measure the health of your elder team at least annually. And what you're doing there is in terms of related to just the ethos of the team. How are you, what's just the kind of the spirit decor of what you're doing together? In terms of your interactions, so I have one elder in our church right now that I love this guy to death, but our team can tell you that he and I talk past each other consistently. We trust each other immensely, so it keeps things from blowing up, but consistently, he will say something or I will say something, and the other one is just like, you might as well be speaking a foreign language. And so I don't think he understands me. I don't think I understand him. And so we have to have other people in the room to help us with that. And so we've got to assess the health of our team. I'm the loudest voice in our room right now. And so I think there have to be ways in which you just create objective ways for your team to come in and go, hey, so while we're here, can we just talk about the way that we do some of this? The way that you bring in proposals acting like this is the gospel, and allowing no room for interaction. Yeah, you're the visionary guy, but just because you're the visionary guy, that could mean you're just wrong and loud. So how do you create the space for your team to evaluate your interactions with one another, and how do you create the space for you to basically evaluate your processes? your processes of membership, your processes in terms of developing leaders, your processes of elders. Are we getting what we want? Are the results happening in terms of the way which our elders are supposed to work? Are our processes effective? So in the PCA, the thing that has happened in a lot of churches is the fact they only train to our theology. So you spend an entire year making your way through the minutia of the Westminster Confession of Faith, and nobody ever talks about things like emotional health. Nobody ever talks about philosophy of ministry in a church. And so you've got guys that are nailing it theologically, but your process isn't producing what you want, because what you're getting is heady guys that haven't figured out how to get out of their own way and actually love people. So can you create an assessment, and we have in Acts 29, which is free to you, and you can take it and modify it in your context and go, we need to ask and have conversations about how we're doing with our processes, how we're doing with our interactions, how we're doing with what we're attempting to do in terms of just the culture of our team. Two more. One is, do you have a written elder exam? I am shocked at how few churches actually do. If you do, that may be surprising to you as well. I'm amazed at how few churches actually have a written elder exam instead of just reading a book together and going, you good? Awesome. I don't care if it's open book. Steve's going through it, and we're going through the Westminster Confession of Faith. I never said, hey, man, close your book, and how well did you memorize stuff? I don't care. When we go through our stuff on our Book of Church Order, you know what my biggest question will probably be for him here in a little bit? Do you have one of these? And do you know where it is? He borrowed it from the church and never gave it back. So the main thing is do you have something written down? Do you have something where somebody has to take the time to be able to articulate it, and then you be able to follow up on it to make sure that they're not creating the theological version of the Griswold family turkey where it looks fantastic, but you poke at it a little bit and it just implodes? The last one is, are you working on wrestling with and understanding your team dynamics? Do you have organizational clarity? So these are sub-points. Sub-point one, do you have organizational clarity? Can you put on one page and say, this is why we're here, this is what we do, this is what we value? Those simple, basic questions, have you as a team defined that, nailed that down, and said, this is who we are as a church? Not copying and pasting from some other church that you think that you're really similar to, and they're killing it, and so therefore we're just going to mimic them and be okay. Do you have organizational clarity? Have you developed the culture that you want within your team, where you're in this together, that you see one another? If you say you're going to be brothers, are you? Are you going to have the kind of culture you want? Are you going to be a heavy, to use language we've used in Acts 29 in the past, is it going to be a heavy kind of prophetic culture within your elder team? Is it going to be a heavy kind of pastoral, priestly team? Is it going to be a very kingly team? So are you going to be focusing primarily on the guardianship of your doctrine? Are you going to be stewarding the direction of your church? What's the mix there in terms of the culture that you want within your team? Do you know each other? Do you know each other's story? Do you know the things that cause people to feel sad and lonely and angry and guilty and ashamed and glad? Sometimes it's silly stuff like, I know this guy likes pancakes. You're like, well, why would that matter? Because you're getting to know somebody and he likes pancakes. Do you know each other and do you trust each other? Do you trust each other to be the guy that jumps out of the plane first and go, hey, so I love you. I think you're an idiot. Or, hey, I'm really messed up right now. Do you have that kind of trust and knowledge of one another on your team to be able to operate in a way that's healthy and helpful? Do you intentionally create and resolve conflict? If your elder team is one kumbaya session, I promise you that you're creating a dysfunctional team. I don't care if you have the same personality type, similar background, you both cheer for the same college football team. If you are not intentionally creating places for conflict, creating abrasion within what you're doing, and finding ways that you're going to resolve it, then you're not going to get the team that you want. And the last one is this. How will you hold each other accountable? How will you hold each other accountable for keeping a watch over your doctrine and your life? Do you benignly allow people to create mountains out of molehills through their life when you look at it and go, bad day? Well, that one bad day turned into 6 bad months of you not asking maybe an awkward question because you really didn't want to blow everything up because of who that guy's married to and the way that she's acting in the church. And it'd just be a lot easier to just kind of try to ignore it. But how are you going to hold each other accountable to whatever it is that you've held each other accountable to as an elder team? So that's flyover, and the application of that, at least one application, is the resources we put together on growing godly elders. If you don't have those, if you're not part of Acts 29, we'll give them to you for free. You can email me at mca@acts29.com, and we'll send you a file that can go into your Dropbox, and you'll have access to some fantastic resources that I think are going to help you at every single level that we've just talked about. So that's, for me, as I'm sitting here with the church, a couple hundred, 300 people, I think the next level for us is really how do we take some things that we've just kind of been spitballing for a while and really begin to kind of hammer down to make it as effective as possible for our team and the guys coming behind us. So you're doing long-term work as you're making short-term decisions. So any questions about any of that? Yes, sir.
You've got some culture already.
Yeah.
You've got elders already. What does it look like to bring new people in while also taking people who are with you to a higher standard? How do you bring those people along without losing them by saying, hey, the bar changed?
Yeah. I think patiently remembering that people are never scaffolding for your dream. So if you find yourself in a replanting or revitalization situation, there people who are there who may not be the leader someday, maybe even soon, they're just not scaffolding for you to build on. They're people that we need to treat the way Jesus would treat. We need to love them well. But persistently, I think that there needs to be the articulation over time of here's the standard. And can all of us in this room meet this standard? And if not, then we need to have honest conversations from a heart of love for the greater good that may lead us to some differences in the way things are laid out, whether it's staffing, elders, or whatever. Hold on just a second. Trike, am I doing this right? Okay, good. I just want to make sure I'm getting old. Hey, I appreciate that.
But does the, and I understand from a character competency chemistry standpoint, that doesn't change. But one of the things we've noticed is the standard changes as
Yes.
And so elders that come on when you're a church of 75 or 100,
yep.
When you're 250 or 300, the expectations of what an elder is and what an elder does
right.
are different.
Mm-hmm.
How do you manage that transition?
Articulate it. Put it down on paper. Talk about it. When the changes begin to come, don't wait for everybody to just figure it out. Just even say, hey, I think we're about to be in a shift where as we're beginning to hire, we're beginning to move some pieces around. I think that what it takes to be in this role is probably going to change, and it probably is going to mean that somebody or some group of somebodies is no longer going to be sitting in this seat. So can we just talk about that here and come to an agreement together about what that may look like? And whether it is now or 5 years or 15 years from now, it may affect each and every single one of us in here personally. So I think getting out in front of it could be really helpful. Yes, sir?
What are the cues or clues that you use to know when is the right time to grow your elder team?
I think you have to make a decision whether or not you're going to basically go, hey, so we're this size church, we're going to have this many elders. So when I got to the church, we had 35 adults, and I had 9 elders. So you have to make a decision about whether you're going to have sort of your quota in class. We're going to have this many, or whether you just go. I think it would be wrong to say that the goal of masculine maturity as an elder in a church You may have some questions about that. I really get fuzzy on going, I think that's the end goal for every man, okay? Because I do think that there are some things that go beyond just the character of an elder, sure. But I think in terms of competencies and skills and wiring, not necessarily life stage, but probably a guy that I would love to be on our elder team because of the nature of his work simply can't do it. So I think you make a decision whether we just go, we're going to raise up every single man in our church, and that's kind of a developmental goal for us, is along this bigger goal of developing leaders, we want to develop men who are going to be there. And so I think it's just you make a decision, either we set a number in place or we just continue to invest in men, and see who God brings to the table. Yes, sir.
So you're going to PCA.
Correct.
Which I'm assuming has congregational both appointment and removal.
Yes. We have one-year terms. You can have up to 6 consecutive, and then you have to take a year off.
It's always congregational for the consecutive?
Yes. And we do that fairly smooth. So in terms of, so people will go, so I used to have this, like we, when I was in Birmingham at a staff there, we had a little bit of a dust-up over the fact that we were managing the slate of elders that we were putting in front of people. So because we had some people that were putting some guys to us, and we're like, no. I mean, it's like a nanosecond of like, we'd see the name, like, no. Now, and so they'd come back to us and go, but we put their name for it, and we go, but that's not the part of the process that you're involved in. You're not involved in the process of who you get to choose. Right, so we're the ones who basically take all those names. We're appreciative of that because we don't want to miss somebody. We're like, oh, yeah, I forgot about Joe. But what we're not going to do is basically go, it's a free-for-all and anybody who wants in there. So we're going to put that slate in front of people, and then they can vote on it. And so that's the way that we would want to do it. Yeah, so I mean, in terms of the PCA, so you have teaching elder, ruling elder. Teaching elder are the ministry of word and sacrament guys. Those are the guys who usually have been to seminary, those kind of things. They are not members of the church. That confused a lot of people in here. I can explain after. So, and then we have one other full-time staff elder, and then we have one other lay elder, and then another one. Hopefully it's coming in here pretty soon. Even though I may be freaking them out by everything I'm saying right now. Any other questions? It's been a this side of the room kind of Q&A. It's my good side. I'm staring at Trike. I think we're done. Oh, wait a minute. There we go. It got awkward, and so somebody felt like they needed to ask a question. Yes, sir. Sure. Let's see if I understand your question. Are you asking, basically, can you take a track where we want to be an active church planting church and we want to raise men up to the office of elder with the eye to send them out?
Well, not everyone's going to want to be sent out.
Sure. But we have a category they may land there. Sure, I think so, because, I mean, again, so one of the things that I've seen is campus ministers who go straight into church planting and they've never been on a church staff. They've never been an elder in a church, and they've never had to work with grown-ups. And so there is a lot of benefit of I think, taking that route and going, we want them to be an elder here because we really think if we're going to send them out, we want some really good, sound relationships there. They understand us, we understand them, we're in this together. And if you're going to send out your best people to go, hey, we're sending out elders in this church to go, that I think it's could be a really effective way of doing that. All right. Hey, oh goodness.
I would like to ask just a practical question.
Okay.
I get asked this all the time. How do you practically, as elders meet, so what do you actually do in your elder meetings?
Yeah.
And then how do you foster a sense of
camaraderie and brotherhood and that kind of thing. So why don't you answer that while I plug this in for the table discussion?
Well, so we're in a season where what we're doing right now is going to be different than I think we'll have to do here in a few months. So because of the nature of our team, so I'm primarily a visionary processor leader, and then I've got two really amazing operator leaders. And so I do think that our elders are responsible for the vision direction of the church. But I would be really, I wouldn't be loving those guys well and serving our church well by continuing to jam them with that stuff. So we created kind of a separate advisory board of two men and two women that basically gets in the room with us and helps us think through kind of those big picture type things. And I think allows Aaron and Lewis to really kind of breathe in that space of being operators. And not feel just burdened by the fact of that their natural bent isn't necessarily towards the big visionary stuff. So what we're doing in there is I take one topic. If there's any principle coming from the question is, we handle one topic in that meeting. And we talk about that. And then we pray about that. Instead of going through your laundry list of 85 agenda points where you never actually discuss anything. But you look at the agenda and you're scared because you don't think you'll be able to go home until it's like 1 a.m. So we just are like, how much of this can we do offline? Can we focus on one topic here? What I do think is going to have to happen as we add more elders is we're going to have to find other space for the elders to be able to operate and grow and develop our relationship independent of that advisory board. But that's where we are right now.
We do stay up till 1.
But you're a younger man than me. Right. Yeah, I think the biggest thing is and I think it's a great question, is because I think you don't want to kind of just create the kind of the stew pot of multiple kinds of meetings. So to me, we're wanting to have, right now, our rhythm with our entire team is we want to have kind of a visionary, big picture meeting once a month. We're going to have an operational, very practical meeting, and then we're going to have a meeting that's a shepherding meeting that involves our elders in that too, that's with our community group leaders. We're going to spend a lot of time praying for our church. And so I would say distinguish the kind of meetings you have and have those separately, because I think your brain just operates. And so it takes a little while for you to kind of get in the rhythm of thinking of shepherding. And if you have to then turn it over and start talking about big picture or practical stuff about budgeting, man, I just think that you're going to be really conflicted. So that's kind of, for us, it's three meetings that involve different people in our teams. Yeah, I mean, but the elders aren't in all those. So so we usually no more than 2 a month. Yeah.
Hey, Matt. Yeah. Is the lead guy in all those meetings?
I am, because of the nature of where we're at. We're at a place now where so I'm full-time with X29. I'm part-time lead guy at our church. And because I'm not in it 40 hours a week, that enables me once a month to come in and hear what our ministry team leaders are doing in a couple of hours instead of having to be in it all the time, because I can't. Same thing on the shepherding. I only lead the visionary meeting. I do not lead the ministry team meeting. That's Aaron, who was here. He ran out on me. So one of my other staff guy, he runs that ministry team leaders meeting, and then our community groups guy runs the shepherding meeting, and I'm just a fly on the wall, just to interact as a community group leader or as a guy who works with some of our ministry teams.
How would you address the issue of any amount of additional meetings?
Yeah.
As what we're with, 200 to 400 people.
Yep.
In the life of the church than anyone else. Mm-hmm. They don't really realize it, especially inner city type of church plant. How do you handle lay elders who have other jobs, being out a lot, involved in community, with your family, in church events? Like, just the struggle of...
I think just clarifying expectations as a team about how often how much time is it going to take. And even I think if you're a full-time lead guy, I would say set your workload to the amount that your lay elders are doing in their vocational job plus the church. That's one way to do it. So you're kind of...
This one?
Yeah.
This is one we really wrestle with. I love what he's doing, so I'm going to come at it from a little different tack, not disagreeing at all. I could be more in agreement. We meet 6 times a year?
Right.
6 times a year. Full team. One of those is a 36-hour retreat or something like that, or 30-hour retreat. I think that's hugely valuable. We meet at dinner, 6 o'clock. We share lives. We spend an hour in the Word. We start the meeting. Hang with me now. We actually start the actual meeting probably around 8. It goes till we hard end at 1 a.m. And we only deal with global issues. The thing I wanted to talk about is we've removed from the elder team what we call governance issues. All the policies and all that, we have another team deal with that. Because that's what will take you forever as an elder team at this size. When we did that, it freed us up tremendously. So we created a governance team that handles that. And there's elders who sit there.
Yeah.
So that allowed us not to have these all these different elder meetings. Now, with that said, then we have kind of a smaller subset of elders. But at this size, you probably wouldn't, and you don't really need to right now. But, I think it's great. We just couldn't functionally. We tried to, in early days of our church, to do 2 every month meetings, and then that didn't happen. And guys were getting burned out, and they weren't even, all these elders are actually really shepherding, doing a lot of work. Plus, they have these meetings. So once we removed the business and went to a little bit more.
Did you have a staff team at that point? Right, when
we
you
did.
Business, so staff were executed.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And most of you guys kind of do now, too. I think at this point, you're kind of getting more on a staff. We call it elder-led, staff-run, governance team supported. So they help with the policies and all that, you know, all that stuff. So, but you don't have to have a governance team. You can just have a team that deals with it or whatever. And that helped us a lot, so we didn't have elders debating policy, which is quite honestly a waste of time.
Maybe the principle is this, is I think that in the season of life that you're at, if you can get your leaders together and go, what's going to be the rhythm where we're going to handle our business, but it's still going to be invigorating and still going to be life-giving. And there may be places within those conversations where if you're a visionary guy and you have to dig into details, you know that you're going to naturally kind of ebb and flow. But give each other permission to do that momentarily. But find a rhythm where it's like, this is sustainable in this season, and we feel like we're walking away invigorated instead of constantly and consistently having the battery drained.
Yeah. So couldn't agree. Just
yeah. Yes, sir.
Can you detail your philosophy on the diversity of your other team?
And men? That's not very diverse. No. The biggest thing that I don't want is all visionary guy. I don't want clones of me. I think sometimes our guys don't believe this. I really want the friction and abrasion that allows us to innovate and be creative and do that intelligently. So the things that I think I'm looking for at this point are men whose driving motivation is out of a love of Jesus, they want to love people. Because I think that's where we are right now. We're not wrestling with a bunch of theological issues, so I think we're in a season where I'm looking to other things. And maybe that's a principle here, is that you are going to be in seasons where you're looking for something a little bit different in this next stretch. You're going to need some guys that do have a lot of vision here, because you know you're coming through a rough patch or a transition period. But it may be that you're really looking for somebody who's just got a pastor's heart. I'm an INTJ. I sometimes enjoy people. So, which is absolutely a lie. I actually deeply love people. I just, they're not always going to feel it. And so I...
Right here.
I appreciate that. So I need, and so we've said this with our women's ministry meeting, we need the kind of those mama bears in our church where with our 20-somethings and our college students, where they're just going to know, they're going to feel experience in every way that they can and should know and feel that they're loved. So I think that's a little bit in terms of diversity. So I think we're just looking at the men that we have and then just asking some questions. And so I don't think we get caught up in clones. The 4 guys that we're going to have on our team are not alike. Yeah, as it relates to the stuff I said today, I mean, I think we really are starting, and it was a really interesting thing for me to preach that sermon this morning, because we don't have anything figured out yet. I mean, I think we're going to press and press and press and press, and so one of the things even in Acts 29, and I think this may be helpful for you if you're coming out from outside of an Anglo middle-class suburban context, is where we're at organizationally right now as it relates to diversity is we don't know anything. And we assume that if you see something about us, you're probably right. In terms of you're like, I think that's off. You're probably right. But I think we're at a place now where I think we're pretty open-handed and going, well, help us. And so I think that may be a good principle in the church. When people come in and they're seeing things differently, hear them out. Believe that Jesus loves you. Believe that you do have the place where God's put you in the church. You don't have to be threatened by people seeing things differently. Hear them well. Know your stuff. Be able to articulate that out of a heart of love. And then maybe over time, as it relates to what we're doing in our neighborhoods in our city, maybe that's where we'll see some of the diversity begin to develop. And then we'll have to have some really fun, challenging conversations about, what about that guy? That's what I'm hoping will happen. I mean, other than the fact that, and this isn't directly related, but in terms of being a nonprofit, you have to, in terms of your board and stuff like that, there has to be a differentiation. I'm trying to think through, I don't have just a hard set rule on that. What I need for non-vocational elders is guys who are willing to swing hard with a velvet-covered hammer on the staff guys who are in it all the time, and then just sometimes go, that's ridiculous. I don't think you're taking stock of what's actually happening out here with us non-professional Christians. And then I think sometimes you're going to need that, the velvety part of the hammer to come along and go to encourage and things like that. So I definitely think that you need both and. And I think context sometimes drives that. So we're in an interesting situation, the fact that we are the size we are with a very small budget, because I got a bunch of college students and 20-somethings. So that even shapes what we could do in terms of staffing and means that we have to rely on a lot of people on a voluntary basis to come along and really help us build that out. You got anything on that in terms of staff and lay elders?
Practically, it's been about 2 to 1. So yeah. 2 non-vocational for every... Is that about right? I think historically we're somewhere in that ratio.
I'd press
that's
on
not,
you.
That's not anything written or anything. It's just kind of a feel.
Yeah, I'd press if anybody had like just an idea of just all staff. I mean, we could probably have that conversation biblically, theologically. Practically, I think it gets you in some muddy water.
All of our pastors are elders on the team. They're not on the smaller team, though. That's another. One more, and then we'll do a little table discussion. Yeah.
Have you guys run any difficulty with staff elders when you have on staff a hierarchy of authority, vision, accountability, and in the elder table you've got quality of voice, cumulative voice of experience, some wisdom?
I'll just tell you descriptively, not prescriptively, how it's played out with us. So, the other staff guy who's been with us for 8 years is my best friend. In 8 years, we've never had the boss fight, even though I would say that he's consistently been deferential. Part of it's the way we're wired as a visionary operator team, that I don't ever feel like he's grasping for the brass ring, okay? And I've never had to play the boss card. But that's just descriptive, and I would be really, really careful in terms of playing that out with people. But I think it's clear, the roles that we play on staff, and then I think just coming around the table, the biggest thing that I've done is I ask a lot of questions, and I just take a posture of, I'm going to assume I don't know much, and I'm just going to ask, and I'm going to assume the best of other people and assume that I don't know anything, and that keeps me in my natural, from my natural bent of already having it figured out before I walked in the room. Oh, we're breaking your rule.
We worked on this a little bit with a theologian friend of ours when we were establishing our eldership. For instance, we're going to have a lead pastor in your bylaws and things. We came up with these kind of categories, take for what you want. But the lead pastor will be over sometimes other elders if it's a staffing situation, position focus, direct report, expense reports, budgets, that kind of thing. The lead pastor must see himself as among the elders. He's one guy, plurality. He sits around a round table. So keyword there. Finally, the lead guy is underneath the elder board's authority. And I think for lead pastors who have strong personalities or strong giftedness as leaders, that has to be an intentional submission where they're accountable and can't be ruining his own accountability structures at all times. So for us, over, among, so lead, serve, accountable, over, among, under, we want the lead pastor to be very well aware of those roles in the relationship.
Yeah.
I just add one quick thing to that. I think this is great, really good stuff. No surprises. I don't want to be surprised in a meeting, and I promise not to surprise them. And so I expect, like Matt said, I expect these vocational guys to disagree with me. I want to have that conversation behind closed doors first so that we can come out and say, we've talked, we disagree, here's what it looks like. So that there's not this tension of like, oh, dude, I just got blindsided in a meeting. Our case, we have 17 elders, and it's just awkward. So, and I don't mind to some degree, but I don't want to do that either way. So we have those discussions. They know the topics that are on the table. We have those discussions behind closed doors. I don't expect them to be yes men. I expect them to disagree with me in the meeting, which is fine. But I want to first have that conversation offline.
Trent, how big is your church?
What? Give me a month.
You said about 1,000.
During summer, about 1,000. School year, about 1,500.
I've seen a lot of churches, they grow. This is a process. A lot of them shifted toward this idea of having an executive elder board.
That's what we have now.
Broader elder board. The executive elder board, usually non-staff, and they operate with a different thing. So I'm wondering, as we grow with staff, that's kind of what I was digging into. Is that a size thing, or is
I think at about 1,000.
Operational thing, like a conflict of interest.
Those two guys and myself, plus two non-vocational elders, make up our executive elder team. All we do is set the agenda for the elder team. That's the big thing we do, and then we meet all the time, the three of us, because we cross that gap between staff and eldership. So, but I wouldn't go there, at least till 8 to 100 to 1,000.
Sure.
I just wouldn't. It gets cumbersome.
I'm just trying to avoid laying myself landmines.
Yeah. No, it's good.
At this stage, that I'm going to have to avoid later.
Yep. No, it's exactly right. And that's why I brought up that in the first session, change often. Larry Osborne says it this way. I know I keep quoting him, but he is kind of the Pope. He says, don't ever attach a Bible verse to a philosophy. Because then when you change it, it seems like, what, you're giving up on the Bible? Right?
So it's true.
Don't do that. Just say, this is the principle we're operating now. Next year, it'll be a different, we're tweaking this. So that's really wise. Because once you go like, yeah, this is the way Moses did it, now you're, you're dissing Charlton Heston here. That's not good. So. Thank you, brother.
Absolutely.
It's a great question. I don't know if you all heard it, but how do you criticize models if you're not looking at it from Scripture? We would say it's like an iceberg. We use the iceberg analogy all the time in our church. And the models and the ministry that you see, what we actually do is what you above. What's below it is the values. Those are scriptural. We have 7 values. We're going to die for those. What happens up here, whether the men play floor hockey at 4 a.m. or not, we can debate that all you want. Does it actually fulfill a value? For us, then it goes to a principle. Principles then lead to strategies. Strategies lead then to ministries. So does that ministry effectively do that strategy? Is that strategy from a principle? And the principles and the values are scriptural. Those aren't really going to change. Matter of fact, I think if we spent time on it, we'd all come pretty much to the same place. What that's going to look like in our context is totally up to debate.
What about quality below the water for you guys?
Polity in...
Yeah, like who's the lead guy accountable to? Actually, right?
That'd be probably right at the water surface line, yeah. Yeah, it'd be a little bit above, a little bit below, yeah.
Like a buoy.
Great. Okay, you know what? We're going to be everybody's friend and let you guys get to the food truck 4 minutes early. So
before you leave, can I say this? Hey, if you're here and you're not part of an Acts 29 church, we've got a town hall in this room with myself and our executive director, Steve Timmis, which he'll say lovely things in a British accent. And so if you want to grab your food and come back in here, and we'll give you kind of just an opportunity to talk about what we're doing in Acts 29.
So you got to move your stuff. Cool. Yep. We'll see you at...